No couple signs up for marriage to lose, mm-hmm. right? So we all want to win, right? But a game plan is a strategy where you, number one, is you define the win. Mm-hmm. Define how you want to win. That means when it's all said and done 50, 60 years later, what do you want your marriage to look like? And then start working back from there. For us, we want to always honor each other. We want people to say they honored one another. Mm-hmm. We want people to say, oh, they stayed faithful to each yes. other, right? No infidelity. We want people to say, like our kids, we want to leave a legacy, mm-hmm. right? And so if we just go over those three things, if that's what you want, then you set goals. Number two is that you would set goals and how you're going to accomplish those things. I mean, business people, we know these things, right? Mm-hmm. You have strategies and things of that nature. You say, here's what we want to do. We set goals. And then somehow in marriage, we throw that all out the window, right? So a part of that also is knowing your team.
Yeah, so that's the voice of George. I don't have their last names, George and Tondra. It was a clip that we found on the Focus on the Family website talking about marriage. Well, today we're going to talk about marriage, but that's not all, because Tim Gagline has just written a new book called What Really Matters. What really matters? What really matters? It's restoring a legacy of faith, freedom, and family. It's really a great book. And you're in for a treat, because Tim's going to give a lot of stats, what's happening now, and also a whole lot of hope. So I hope you enjoy this show. But before we get into it, there's always this. This is June now, and you know, one of the things that happens in June is Father's Day. So when an unexpected pregnancy happens, the focus is almost always on the mom. And dads, well, too often they're overlooked and pushed to the side, left feeling like their voice doesn't matter. But maybe that's how you feel too. You want to be supportive, you want to do the right thing, but fear sets in and questions start racing. Can I really do this? Can I be a good father? Well, that's exactly how John felt. Me, a dad? That didn't even feel possible, he said. I didn't know the first thing about being a good father, but then we found preborn. We talked to people who cared, and we got a free ultrasound. That's when it came together for me, that we could do this, and that I could do this. Today, you can help another father experience that same moment of hope. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound through preborn and help expectant parents see a future filled with life, compassion, and the hope of God's love. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Okay, so stay tuned. Today we're going to be talking about restoring the legacy of faith, freedom, and family. If you're in a troubled spot in your marriage, your children are in a troubled spot, or you just look around you and you see all the problems, you see the ignorance on history. Bruce never watching. So was Jesse Waters the other day, and he went on the street and asked people about history. Jay Leno used to do that, and it used to be funny. This wasn't funny. He asked questions like, who did we fight in World War II? One girl said, ourselves. When the Civil War was, they didn't know anything. They gave the most bizarre, silly answers. It was appalling. These are young people who otherwise look like, you know, nice kids, but they didn't know anything about history. And so Tim talks about that, Tim Gagline, in this book as well, restoring, history, the knowledge of history. So we're going to talk about that, and with Tim Gagline, who's the vice president of Focus on the Family, on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Great teenagers are made at 3, 4, and 5 years old. Teach your kids to respect authority. And if your kids are being defiant or disobedient or they're not doing what you told them, you got to hold the line. And whether that consequence is a timeout in their room or they've lost the sweet treat they were going to get, or now they don't get to go on the outing, or whatever you deem appropriate in your home, you got to hold the line. This is all over scripture. He's got the Ten Commandments. He's, you know, he is a just God. So we are not doing our young sons any favors by letting things slide.
That's true. I can attest to that from my young, not so young son now. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. And today I have the delight of talking to a really good friend of mine. I've known him for more than 20 years. We worked together in Washington, D.C. when I was president of Concerned Women for America, and he was representing the Bush White House. I used to come into my office all the time, and they had coalition meetings. And I just have great memories of Tim, and we did develop a great friendship that's lasted now all these 20 years. So, Tim Gagline, thanks for joining us today.
Sandy, as ever, it's great to be with you.
So, I should say that the reason he's joining us today is because he's just written a new book called What Really Matters, Restoring a Legacy of Faith, Freedom, and Family. So, Tim, that's kind of been your theme for years. In fact, you are the Vice President of Government and External Relations for Focus on the Family. You've been doing that for a long time. Let me go back on your bio and go before that part of your life. You held senior positions for a decade in the United States Senate. I don't even know that. What did you do in the Senate?
Yes, I was the communications director and press secretary for U.S. Senator Dan Coats of Indiana.
Dan Coats,
and 10 years in the Senate, Sandy, is about 64 million dog years.
That's true. I know. I knew as soon as you said, I remember Dan Coats, because you're from Indiana. Nearly 8 years at the White House, and that was the Bush administration, and for the past 18, Vice President of Focus on the Family. And he's written so many books. How many books, Tim?
This is the fifth, and the sixth is coming in about a year and a half.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I admire you for that. It didn't take me too long to write my book, but it was my own story, so it's quicker. Yeah, I mean, you do all this great research. Do you read all the time?
I do. I read all the time. I had the advantage of having a rather extraordinary mother and father who, from a very young age, strongly encouraged three things: reading, writing, critical thinking. I think I must have heard that a million times growing up. And I love to read, and I particularly love to read along the narrative lines of the basis of what really matters, because, as you know, Sandy, having been here so long, it's very easy for the political class to do a lot of chattering but not actually focusing on what really matters. And that was the whole point and purpose in writing the book.
That's absolutely true. You know, I used to always say, I learned this along, that's probably my faith in Christ. I don't know what moment, I can't just describe a miraculous moment, but I just realized that I needed to constantly remember who I was and why I was doing what I was doing. That was when I was a singer, a Christian artist. You know, no matter how many compliments you got or successes, just remember, no, this is what I'm about. This is who I am. I'm really nobody, actually, but God has called me to do this, that, and the other, and that really did... That really served me well. And I realize, I agree with you, people go to D.C. and they just forget who they are, where they came from, and what they came to Washington to do. And so that's What Really Matters really hits the nerve. Now, Tim, you actually partially answered my first question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. You talk about family all the time. Almost all your books are related to things like that and the importance of family and history and all of that. But tell us about your family, even more than you just did.
I'd love to do that. Married of 35 years to the love of my life, two sons, and I don't mind saying, my wife and I met when we were very young. We were in our teens, and we have found over all these years, Sandy, that there is a remarkable benefit to having common memories, common stories. You know, we like to say when we were kids, but year upon year, it becomes so much more important. And I'm glad you said that about the family, because as you and I both know, these are the lowest marriage rates in all of American history. I mean, here we are in our 250th year, and yet in all 250 years, we've never had a lower marriage rate. We've never had a lower fertility rate. I'm quite certain that I never would have anticipated. And frankly, Sandy, just through all of our years of friendship and conversation and discussion and working for common goals, I feel certain that there never would have been a moment when we would say in America there are more babies born to women in their 30s than in their 20s, you know, or that if you on a percentage basis, if you say what percentage of American homes have a married mother and father with at least one child living with them in the home who's 18 years of age or under, that percentage in the entire vast largeness of America is under 25% now. So it's one thing, you know, for people to walk into a room and say, this is my view of marriage, family, parenting. As you know from What Really Matters, when you delve into the empirical research, you begin to see that we're in a new moment, and we're at a hinge moment. I mean, it's either going to be, what kind of year do we want, in the year ahead as we celebrate, this incredible 250, and what are we going to do about these first institutions, or the country will decide to go in another direction. But I'm an inveterate optimist, and I believe American restoration is possible indeed.
I do too, Tim. And of course, with God, a lot of people are, of course, rediscovering faith or discovering it for the first time. And I'm kind of optimistic myself about that, what that will do to marriage and the family. But I was just thinking, I've noticed this before, and I've said this publicly. Hardly ever do you see an intact family, a mother and a father and their children, like walking through the park, looking at the birds and standing by a lake. That is like, and when you do see that, it's like, it's heavenly. It's a touch of heaven. It's like, it's so refreshing because it's so rare. Now, I know there are some areas of the country where it's not so rare, but in D.C., I don't think you see that very often, maybe in Virginia. But you know what I'm saying. It used to be the norm. It's not the norm anymore. In fact, I'm going to read from your first chapter here, Restoring Marriage, because I do want us to talk about this because it's so important. You say, according to the 2022 American Family Survey, the share of American men and women who are presently married is only 45%. The decreasing marriage rate has led to a spike in the number of people living alone, more than 37 million adults as of 2021. It really is amazing, Tim, and I find myself, because I was just reading a bit of that chapter, you wonder how, I think I know, but I think you know too, but what was the, how did we get to this point? What was the, how did the decay start that's led us to this position where marriage is not even really valued? People are living together. They don't think it's important that they marry. Kids are not marrying. They rather live together, and they live with several people, and sometimes they never get married at all. So how did we get to this point?
Yeah, I'm really honored by that question, Sandy. And I remember doing your program when my fourth book, Stumbling Toward Utopia, came out, because in that book, I did a deep dive look at where the moral and social revolution of the 1960s and 70s actually came from. And one of the six revolutions that I look at with some depth is the sexual revolution. The word picture, is a bowling ball. That's the sexual revolution, and it's aiming toward, the pins, and the pins are marriage, family, parenting, human life, religious liberty, conscience rights, parental rights, pronouns that have fixed meanings. And when that moral revolution slammed into the most important permanent things, the damage was really incalculable. And as you know from our wonderful conversation then until What Really Matters Now, I said that the next thing I was going to do was to actually show in 21st century America what that actually means. And I think the reason I made Restoring Marriage the very first chapter of What Really Matters is because it seems to me that if we're going to have any conversation whatsoever about reclamation or restoration or regeneration or renewal, that those conversations are important, but it's never actually going to happen in America unless we restore marriage. And I think it is secondly, to your point, if I may, particularly important to absorb what this actually means. Because as you said, Sandy, fewer than half of U.S. households are now comprised of married couples. I mean, set aside children for a moment. We're just talking now households with married couples. That number is well under 50%. And if you and I were having this conversation just 50 years ago, which is really a snap of the finger, that number was 65% and over. That is a really dramatic drop. And I think we can contribute something else that I think is particularly important, which goes to the first thing that you said, which is that we are in a loneliness crisis. We are in a dating recession. 15% of all American men, Sandy, they say they have no friends. You know, I attribute a lot of this to the year 2010, which was the year that smartphones were introduced. Uh-huh. And for all the good things about smartphones, it's dislocation and the incentivization of apartness from other people.
No question about that. And add to that computers and laptops and all of that. And, you know, and people are introducing them to their babies. It's just amazing to me. But I think that's absolutely true. I think same-sex marriage, of course, had a lot to do also with moving us in the wrong direction. Because some of my staff at CWA used to say, it was like a counterfeit marriage. And it makes the real thing less expensive, less valuable. And I think that they were right about that. I also think, you know, Tim, if I were to write another book, I would write it to young women, and some of it would be something like this. You know, when you go to a wedding, when we went to a wedding 50 years ago, it was like the white dress, both parents, both families, you know, one on each side. There were exceptions, but this was pretty much the norm. And the couple were going to say their vows and that night have sex for the first time. So it was an anticipatory thing of coming together. Then they were going to move into a home and live together for the first time. That was a huge part of the excitement. And they did that, even if they didn't have strong faith, they did that under, you know, the blessing of God. The words were from Scripture. And now, Tim, you know, most of the time the couples have been living together. I don't know the stats. I don't know. But I'm guessing most of the time the couples have slept together. They usually, often I'll say it that way, cohabitate. They already have a place. So they get together in their home for the wedding, you know, go get married, maybe even have a child and take the child along who's the ring bearer. And so the wedding, and then the emphasis is on how much the dress costs, the venue. That's why all these really expensive weddings, because that's what matters now, because the real thing doesn't matter. It has no value or meaning. I mean, really, we've just cheapened marriage so much by so many reasons. And your chapter, Restoring Marriage, is very important. And so tell us some other things. You talk about, I don't know, I would like you to go back to the the loneliness things, because it's not just boys who are lonely. Yeah. How about marriage? What are the stats or the things that you discovered about people in marriage being lonely versus single?
Yeah, I love that question because, as you know, this book, Sandy, has over 450 footnotes. In other words, I wanted to bear out this question when Pat Moynihan famously said everyone's entitled to his own opinions, but not everyone's entitled to his own facts.
Exactly.
And so, if I was going to do a book about restoring marriage, restoring family, you know, I have a chapter, Restoring the American Male, the idea of the good life. I wanted to genuinely absorb and to help share what the best empirical data says. So I love what you asked, and I'm going to ask them. I'm going to answer them right in order. The first is that all is a very dangerous word, but all of the best empirical, most recent research shows that overwhelmingly what is best for children is a two-parent family. because two-parent families provide significant benefits for children. And this is not in any manner a criticism of single parents. There's no doubt that millions of single parents work incredibly hard at being excellent parents. But on average, children from two-parent households have greater access to resources and opportunities. So conclusively, that is the case when it comes to married couples and children. The second thing is that the best empirical research, and I'm talking about spiritual health, material health, physical health, mental, emotional health. I promise you these things, as you know, have been very widely studied. Not studied by people who share yours and my worldviews, just studied with a large swath of the American people. And my friend Brad Wilcox at the University of Virginia, who has found conclusively that marital quality is far and away the top predictor that anybody has run across for life satisfaction in America. That is absolutely the case. And the third thing, and I'm so glad you said this, because it's what is the benefit, after all, of marriage? I mean, you know, whether you are a Christian or not, if you are married with children, you know, why is this such an ideal? And I think it is fair to say that the best research confirms that marriage orients men and women toward the future because it asks them not just to commit to each other, but it asks them to plan, to earn, to save, to devote themselves to advancing their children's prospects. And you just simply cannot equate married couples with people who are living together as domestic partners because the best research, as you know, Sandy, shows with a large percentage that people who live together before being married, and especially those who live together before being married with children, overwhelmingly, if that is their choice, the prospect of divorce is exponentially higher than if you don't live together before being married. So all of the research confirms with great precision exactly what you asked about.
So let's just talk about what younger people who are marrying age, teenagers, and what they're being told. So I think of, you know, the feminist influence, that's another factor in the decay of marriage. It's just so wicked, it really is, Tim. And but girls are being told that they don't need men, they're smarter, more capable. You don't need a man in your life. And then they're also told, you know, they sort of reject, even if they do marry, they sort of power up on their husbands. That's my opinion. You know, I'm not cooking. I'm not your maid. I'm not cleaning. I hear this from otherwise good girls. I've heard this. And so I'm talking to the girls' side of this for right now. But Tim, for women, what have you found in your research is a reason for those girls who feel that way? What's a counter argument?
Yeah, I have a whole chapter called Restoring a Well-Ordered Society. And it is one of the most difficult chapters I've ever had to write. Because as you know, Sandy, in each of the chapters, I write, you know, sobering news and hopeful news. And I remember having a conversation with Dr. Dobson, one of the very last conversations I ever had with him. And I said, Jim, you've written, you know, well over 50 books. Of all the books you've written, what was the most difficult one? And Sandy, without hesitating, Dr. Dobson said, Bringing Up Girls, which is one of the most powerful books he ever wrote. And I have never forgotten that conversation, and especially in writing What Really Matters. Because what I found, to your point, is that the suicide and self-harm rates for adolescents, but particularly girls, and this is actually hard to share because it's so sobering, but the suicide and self-harm rates for adolescents has quadrupled from 2010, which, as I mentioned earlier in this wonderful conversation, was the start of the smartphone era, just to 2021. So just in those 11 years, suicide and self-harm among young American girls has quadrupled. And in real terms, what we're talking about here, Sandy, is that 60% of girls and 30% of boys who report these persistent feelings of loneliness. And I think it is fair to say that the picture often is just as difficult for young American men, because men now account for 3 out of every 4 suicides or drug overdoses. And as I am wont to say, it's hard to believe, but it's true, that about 50% of American men say they have no friends. And the common denominator in all of this is the smartphone era, which truly incentivizes people not to build friendships, not to build relationships, not to go on dates, not to get married, to silo yourself, to isolate yourself, to create virtual relationships, and often never seeing another human being through the day. So I think we have, as a country, as a remarkable, extraordinary country, if we're asking ourselves what kind of a country do we want in 50 years, we have to confront the reality of the cultural moment.
Well, you have a chapter on restoring the American male, and I certainly want to talk about that. You know, Tim, I had a conversation, I'll just say it was with a mutual friend of ours, Lieutenant General Boykin, and he was talking, this has been a few years ago, he was telling me about how in the military they were at that time having so much trouble recruiting men because young American men could not pass the physical. They could not do even the simplest in training. Their shoulders were smaller. Their testosterone rates were lower. They even when they worked, they were not able to accomplish what men 50 years ago could. Look, I can't remember the exact stat that he said about that. And 50 years is my picking that out of the air. But I'm just saying, in general, in the past, they could find boys that were very virile and ready to do training and rise to the occasion. But in current modern day America, they can't. I don't know if that what's happening now with Pete Hegseth is. But I don't know. But so that's just one huge issue. And then that carries over to dating. Girls are frustrated because they can't find manly men. And so they get more manly and the boys get more feminine. It's just so twisted and broken. So what can you say about restoring the American male, Tim?
Well, there's two big things to say. And I really mean that if I had to pick out one silver lining, and it's kind of counterintuitive, Sandy, I would pick out the demographic of American men 18 to 30. Now, what I'm about to say does not in any manner negate what you just shared, because I'm going to share the other side of this as well. But of a sudden, in a way that is actually quite surprising in a very good way, American men, 18 to 25, are telling reliable people, people who do surveys and do important research, they say that religion and faith has never been important than now, and they want to build spiritual lives. They say they want to be married. They want to have children. They say that they don't want to miss the blessing and the miracle of fatherhood. This is quite remarkable. The most recent Gallup numbers, and these are very recent numbers, say that about 49% of American men 18 to 25 are in this category, broadly defined. What is really remarkable is that women who are in the same category, much less, 29%. And the question is, what explains the chasm? Because a lot of people go to church, they're in their congregation, they're in their parishes, and they can tell you, not anecdotally, but statistically, that overwhelmingly they're seeing more young men in church. That's not a phantom. It's absolutely the case. But to your point, Sandy, what explains this chasm, this difference between young American men and young American women? And I think my friend Nicholas Eberstadt at the American Enterprise Institute, who has done path-breaking research, in part, has explained this chasm, because he said, while there's such good news with young men in you know, the kind that I'm speaking about, at the exact same time, in the same generation, we have millions of men, able-bodied young men, who are not working, not looking for a job, they're not in school, they're not applying to school. And may I say, really what they are unmarriageable. Because if you have blue, bright as blue women from urban America, or you have ruby red women from ex-urban, suburban America, as different as their worldviews may be, Sandy, they are telling people who research these questions that if they want to be married and they want to have children, they are all looking for a stable, continuous economic contributor to the marriage. And if they want to have children, they want a father who's going to be a great dad and be present. So it seems to me, especially among young American men, there is very good news and there's very sobering news. And it also, in part, explains why commonly women say, I want to be married, I want to have children, but I'm having a great challenge finding what they determine, you know, to be a marriageable male. I mean, it's a real hinge moment in American culture, and especially among young Americans.
Oh, absolutely, Tim. And I think my husband and I talk about this often. It comes up in our conversation. When it comes to jobs in the country, like with AI, the introduction of AI, what kind of jobs are there? We were just trying to figure that out the other day. There's jobs where you have skills, like if you want to be a mechanic, or if you can do things with your hands, a builder or a plumber, I grew up in a blue collar family. I think anybody that works hard deserves your respect, and that's because a lot of people that have a great education are lazy, and that I don't respect that. So anyway, but for jobs that are executives, a lot of those are being cut out because of AI. And if it's the military, what are the people doing? Or go into, you know, healthcare? It's so hard for young men to find jobs right now, Tim. Maybe you have a different opinion of that, and if you do, I'd love to hear it. But it's maybe not the fact that they've gotten used to not working and they're living in their parents' basements. Maybe they don't have good options.
Yeah, I think it is a mix, and I think it's very important, you know, all of us to be comfortable with it's very often not an either-or situation, especially on the rapidly changing American employment front. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But what concerns me is even, before the AI, what we call the AI era or epic. For instance, Sandy, I write in the book about the fact that more than 4 million people have dropped out of the workforce just since 2020. Wow. And the vast majority of those, as I say, are able-bodied men between the ages of 25 and 30. And I do think that when you're looking at numbers that high, I mean, we're a large, complex continental nation of 340 million people. But I think it is very important, and I know you do too, not in any manner to downplay those who are educated only to high school and below. But it is a fact, overwhelmingly, that the number of American women who are educated, at least 4 years of college and very often beyond, they are now overwhelmingly outpacing men, both as undergraduates and those with a graduate degree. So it's also true that we have to factor in that difference when it comes to selecting the person who's going to be, going to be a husband or wife. So it seems to me that Christian principles and our worldview has never been more important than it is right now. You know, the Italians don't know when they were born. The British don't know when they were born. The Germans don't know when they were born. We in America, we know when we were born. July 4th, 1776, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a remarkable country. It's a remarkable history, but we have remarkable restoration to do. We've got a large task in front of us.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Tim. I actually see some improvement, but we've got a long way to go. And of course, women, to just touch on that for a second, women are just being poisoned by the whole feminist movement. It's just had a horrible effect on our culture. And I think that's why many more of them got into college and finished degrees, because they had advantages. Look at all the women governors, the women CEOs. I believe they've been given preference over men because everybody was looking for women. And so it's this whole imbalance has got to stop. It really does. And I think that's created an imbalance as well. Anything else you want to say about the American male? Because you've got some great chapters here, and there's a few others I'd like to talk about. But anything further about the American male, restoring the American male?
You bet. Just one thing, which I think is worth saying. I am very interested in a Pew Research study, Sandy, that found that 70% of adults, that's a gigantic number in any reliable survey. This Pew survey found that 70% of American adults believe it is very important for a man to financially support his family if he is to be defined as a good husband. And what I was so interested in regarding these numbers is that it's not just, conservative or more traditional-oriented Americans who are answering this question. In other words, I believe very often that the people who are put in the space of progressive, they very well may be progressive on a number of fronts. But I think that when it comes to the family unit, the goodness of marriage and babies and children and families, and how that relates to having a really well-ordered society in life, I still believe that there are millions of people, even in a very aggressively secular culture, who share our worldview and who want this very important thing of marriage and family and children. And I think there's great hope in the next generation, because this generation has lived through remarkable brokenness, remarkable fracture, unevenness, and I really do think they want something better. I believe that with all my heart, and I think the research bears it out.
Oh, I agree with you, just experientially. I love Bruce and I eat out a lot because I don't cook a lot. So that's a black mark against me, but that's the truth. And we actually end up talking to, waitresses and waiters lately, especially. I have just had the most fascinating conversations. And a few of them recently have been, from my traditional Christian view, they tatted earrings, kind of hard looking. Just moved here from New York, the one boy and the one girl I just met. And I'm talking to them, and I see a cross tattooed on both of them. They don't know each other, different restaurants, as far as I know. They both had crosses on them. And I asked them, each of them, what does that mean to you? And when I got into the conversations with them, like the girl is, she's lived life on the wild side. She just came back from Australia where she... I don't know what she was doing, but she was there for probably a year traveling. And she said one night she looked up into the sky and it was so just breathtaking because they have a very, very big sky in Australia. She felt God's presence. So she's come back to the States and now she's reading her Bible. She's not affiliated with any church, but she's reading her Bible. This girl, she's 22, I think. And then another boy, the same similar story. So all that to say, Tim, I'm seeing that too. Among kids that are not churched, who have a different, have had a different worldview or no worldview at all, I think something is happening that's changing things. I believe it's God, actually.
Yes.
I think that's the something.
Yes, I do too. I was in a debate of all things, a media debate on Good Friday morning. And my interlocutors, did not share our conservatism. And at the very end of the debate, they were nice enough to give me the last word. And they said, kind of in this debate we were having, what is your sense for the coming Easter weekend? And I said, I would predict that whether you live in blue urban New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Cleveland, or whether you live in the suburbs of Louisville or Orlando, or et cetera, et cetera, I said, I predict that you're going to find churches and parishes flooded this weekend. And it's not going to be because, people are just, nostalgically wanting to be back in church for the weekend. I said there is something really happening, and it's happening particularly among young people. I think, Sandy, we're actually potentially in a very early chapter of what I think of as kind of a quiet American revival. I really do think that. I think that young people are of a sudden interested in what I broadly call things of the Spirit. And I think that the kind of conversations that you're having and the kind of data sets and research that confirm those conversations, I think points to a very good thing. And I think the restoration of faith will come at a time where, a spiritual crisis is the number one issue bedeviling the United States of America. And I think that too often moral relativism has dominated, popular culture and social media and movies and film and et cetera. And yet you have a generation who's coming along who is saying, I don't really buy into that anymore, or I really don't believe that that's categorically the case. I find that all to the good. And I think it is a fundamental part of the way that we restore a country like ours.
I couldn't agree more, Tim. And Bruce and I were just at the celebration, repentance, and jubilee by the Washington Mall just 2 weeks ago, I guess, or I've lost track, but I think it was maybe not quite 2 weeks. Tim, that was just amazing. And the one thing that I observed there was this is also different. I've lived a long time. I've never seen this happen. Well, first of all, we had the vice president speak. We had the secretary of state talk about Jesus and God's influence in miraculous moments in our country. We had the secretary of war do the same while they're giving testimony of their personal faith, talking about Jesus publicly. We had the president read, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways and then will I and ask forgiveness, basically. Then will I look from heaven and heal their land. He read all of that, plus he read the part that says, and if you don't turn, then I'll make you like a laughingstock among the nations. Our president read that. I thought that was amazing. He did it by video. My point is this. And then at the end, the person that called us to repentance, personal repentance on our knees, was the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Now, Tim, you and I have been we've been around politics for a long time in government in D.C. When have you ever seen anything like that with the top leaders of the nation? When?
Yeah, I was there as well. And I said to my wife and to my neighbors, I could have levitated home. It was a remarkable moment, wasn't it?
It was.
I was saying to a neighbor of ours that not since the day or two after 9/11, when members of the House, kind of extemporaneously, Democrats and Republicans, came out of the Capitol building and they joined together on the stairs in front of the House of Representatives and began singing "God Bless America" together. We have become so polarized, and the polarities have become so deep and broad. That when you find a moment like you and I shared on the Mall, where there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people from all over our country, it was just a great moment. And I think, Sandy, and maybe you do too, that it is moments like that where you realize, and I emphasize this so strongly in What Really Matters, I think you realize that it's not money. Or material things, but it is faith and it is family that are the foundations of public life in a nation like ours. And I think that as faith and families have become weaker, then I think you can say probably that every structure upon those foundations has become weaker as well. But as the family has been restored, and marriage has been restored. And above all, faith in a nation, faith in God and the way that God blesses a nation, as that has been restored, there is a direct connection to the strength and the confidence of the country. And that's really what I want to get at in this book, because I don't just want to analyze the moment in which we find ourselves. You know, that's one third of the book. But two thirds of the book is, now that we know that, you know, kind of the condition we're in, what can we actually practically do, you know, to move us toward the kind of reclamation and revival and regeneration that we want for our great country? I think that's the heart of it.
Well, I think it's a great book, Tim. I was trying to read as much as I could before we started, and I just thought, oh, I wish I had more time. I wish I had more time, because you're a great writer, and it is really such a good book. The contents, for those of you that, I don't think I said this, but there's a chapter on restoring marriage, restoring the family, restoring the American male, restoring a well-ordered society, restoring faith, and restoring the importance of history, which we didn't get to. But again, it's called What Really Matters. The author is Tim Gagline, and he's been our guest today. So, Tim, thank you so much. This is a great book, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to interview you. Thank you.
What a joy to be with you. I love our friendship. Thank you so much, Sandy, and be of good cheer.
Same to you, Tim. God bless you and all you do. So, thank you. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I want to take a moment to tell you about an event that's coming up June 16th to the 19th. It's going to be in Lincolnshire, Illinois. Okay, why would I be mentioning this? Because it's Turning Point USA. It's Turning Point USA, and it's absolutely fabulous. Bruce and I'm pretty sure we're going to be there. We'd love to see. You know, for those of you that don't live in Illinois or in the Chicago area, Southwest has some really good flights to Chicago. Wherever you are, trust me, I've taken them many times. And they're not bad in terms of the cost either. So this Educator Summit is what it's called. Courage in Our Convictions, Cultivating Clarity in Chaos. You know, Turning Point continues to be doing some absolutely incredible things. And this is just one more of them. The head of their education department is Hutz Hertzberg. You've heard Hutz on this show. He's a very close friend of mine, and he's been with Turning Point, you know, for several years now. Hutz is just a godly man, smart as he can be. And he had a near-death experience, which I had him come and share with on the program a few years ago. And so Charlie Kirk hired Hutz, and Hutz, you know, was able to really bring some wisdom to all that Charlie was doing. So who are the speakers at this conference? Erica Kirk is coming, George Barna, Al Mohler, John Stonestreet, Megan Basham. She's the one who wrote Shepherds for Sale. She was our guest to talk about that. Riley Gaines, Mary Miller. Mary is a congresswoman from Illinois. She's been with us too, but it's been a while. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman who is a farmer who has like six children. And she's just a firebrand in Congress, strong believer in Christ. Now, some of these people I don't know, but I'll mention a few names Ben Shetler, Ryan Walters, David Goodwin, Heather Lloyd, maybe they're familiar names to you. Bill Federer, Erwin Lutzer, you've heard those names. Because Erwin Lutzer has been on this show many times, and so is Bill Federer. Bill is just a real wonderful, masterful history, expert in history. You've heard his commentaries. And John Woodbridge is going to be there, Bruce Lockerbie, Scott Phelps. Scott's a guy who's been fighting or promoting abstinence for many, many years. Tom Morrison, Natasha Harris. Let's see. I can't mention them all. I think I'll stop with that. But it's June 16th through the 19th in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And if you'd like to go, go to turningpointed.com. Turningpointed, as in education.com. Turningpointed.com. And check it out. You can reserve a space. It's, again, June 16th through the 19th. In Lincolnshire, Illinois. Lincolnshire. That's on the north side of Chicago, by the way, in case you want to know. So, again, turningpointed.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed my discussion with Tim Gagline. I just love talking to him. He's got so much knowledge in his head. He's just really funny because he rattles off all this stuff all the time. And I love that, actually. Not many people are like that anymore. We don't read much, and we kind of dumbed ourselves down, haven't we? Which is my occasion to say, don't do that. I don't care how old you are. Don't get lazy in your consumption of good stuff. I've been reading, I sound like I'm bragging. I'm not really. It's just that I've been in news and politics for so long, and I'm always in taking that in for many years of my life. But now that I have a little bit more time, I'm really reading a lot of stuff. I'm working on the biography of George Whitefield. His name is Darrymore. I can't remember his first name. I didn't know I was going to talk about this, but it is such a good book. It's on Prime. I am listening to it on the Audible. I ask Bruce if I'm listening to it. I've listened to it every night for the last probably month because I go to sleep. It's just a powerful biography of the movie. The Great Awakening was about George Whitefield. If you missed that movie, just go to that movie, or you can now get it through Amazon, I think, or some platform on your television. But I'm reading this biography, which gives a lot more information, and I'm just loving it. I was reading about Plato, because who's ever read Plato? And he raised your hand. I didn't take philosophy in college, and so I wanted to learn. So I'm really enjoying stretching my mind, and I challenge you to do that too. Because when you go out for conversation, your mind gets tired, and what do you talk about? Sports and dogs, the two things I can't discuss. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's time to kind of expand. I don't know when we ever thought that we should stop learning, but it certainly wasn't the view of our founding fathers. They learned languages, they learned, trades and all, growing, architecture, all that stuff. After they were adult men, even into, while they were founders of our nation. So I think it's a good challenge, and I would just really encourage you to take that seriously and kind of expand your reading base. It's not a punishment. It's fun, okay? All right. Well, it's great to talk to you. Just appreciate you so much. And if you'd like to help Preborn make this possible and save babies while they're at it, and again, the order is save babies, save babies, save babies. And helping the show is like secondary, way down the line. So go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.